I want to discuss tonight a couple of aspects of the halachas of Nogea B'Davar, an interested party, in the context of Dayanim and Edim. So the end of our Siman, Siman Zayin, discusses the halacha of Nogea B'Davar by a Dayan. There's not actually that much in the Shulchan Aruch, it's just one sif. Most of the halachas of Nogea B'Davar, as well as many of the other psulim of Dayanim, as you'll get this impression from learning the poskim, are actually discussed at greater length and more detail later in Halachas Edim. For whatever reason, that's how the Torah Shulchan Aruch bring it. They bring the detailed halachas later in Edim, and Dayanim, they kind of briefly tell you to look at Halachas Edim. So a lot of our discussion will have to do with Halachas Edim, but I want to discuss two interlocking, important shailas regarding Nogea B'Davar that both emerge from a curious little Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says that if someone sold property to someone else, Reuven sold property to Shimon, and now there's some dispute about whether the property was, whether the sale was legitimate, there's some shaila about it. So it says he can testify. He sold it shelo b'achrayus, so if the property gets taken by somebody else, he won't owe the buyer anything. There was a sale with no warranty, no recourse against the seller. Nevertheless, mishna amidu afnei bal chovo. Since the original seller's creditor will be able to seize the property, even if he sold it to somebody else, that's called Mechasim Meshubadim, he'll be able to seize it. So he has an interest in his creditor getting back the sub. He has no direct interest in it, but he has an indirect interest, and he wants the field to remain in the hands of the person he sold it to in order that his creditor should be able to seize it. The Gemara discusses what that means. The Gemara says the Maskana is, the reason for this is, that even though why should he care? Why does he really care whether the creditor gets it or not? So if he doesn't have any other property, if he has no other property, the Gemara says, if the creditor doesn't get this one, he'll get nothing. So either way, he's off the hook. He has nothing for the creditor to take. So why does he care if the creditor is satisfied or not? So the Gemara says, because lo nechle de lahavi lava rush of lo yishalim. He doesn't want the creditor to be in a position of be able to say to him, you're a Russia, I lent you money, you never paid me back. He has an interest in satisfying the imperative to pay off debts. That he shouldn't be called a Russia who doesn't pay, a deadbeat who doesn't pay back his debts. So the Risharim and Akharim ask Akasha right away over here. This doesn't make any sense. We suspect this guy is going to lie, he's going to make a false statement, testify falsely and based in steal property in order to avoid being called love a Russia of Lo Yishalim. Someone who lies and based in and falsely helps somebody get property that doesn't belong to him is a much bigger Russia than someone who simply defaults on a debt. So why on earth would the person have a temptation to be to avoid love of Russia, to actually perjure himself or testify falsely and basely? So one teretz is just a kind of sociological teretz. It kind of rings true. This guy is not worried so much about what Hashem is going to do to him, about real ethics. He's worried about public perception. If he defaults on a loan, everyone knows he's a deadbeat. If he testifies falsely, nobody knows. People will think he's telling the truth, so he'll look like a better guy. So it's purely a question of his perception in the eyes of people, but that's all it is. That one way he looks better, one way he looks worse. There is another teretz, Moram Lublin, and this teretz is found in Rishonim too. There is another teretz which goes to a very important understanding of the psul of Nogea B'Davar. The early Achronim have a major debate as to how we understand the psul of Nogea B'Davar. Some say, common sense, we suspect him of lying. Someone who has an interest in the case, a dayan or an aide who has an interest in the outcome of the din Torah, he has a temptation to lie. And even though we discussed previously, when it comes to things like ohev and sone, enemies and friends, we say, lo nechshu Yisrael al kach, judgment they can't do because they're biased, they might not get the case right. But aidim, we say, who just say the fact, are not going to lie just because they have personal friendships or enmities. But when it comes to Nogea B'Davar, an actual interest, an actual financial interest, they will lie. Even Jews are suspected of lying if they have an actual negiah, an actual outcome. So that's one way to understand Nogea B'Davar. It's a chashash sheker. Now, there's no actual pasuk for Nogea B'Davar. For when it comes to krovim, we have psukim, relatives, we have psukim. When it comes to Russia, someone who's a Russia is not kosher for an eid or dying, there's psukim. Doesn't seem to be, as far as I've seen so far, any actual pasuk for Nogea B'Davar. It sounds like a svara. So one idea of the svara, and there's actually a lot of debate, whether it's deraisa or drabanan even, but even if it's deraisa, it sounds like it's a svara. So one version of the svara is Nogea B'Davar. It is chashash sheker. We're afraid you're going to lie. You're going to be tempted to lie out of your personal interest. The other svara is, even without any question of lying, that the halacha is that it's like a karav. Adam karav etzel atzmo, a baldover himself cannot be an aid. A person himself can't testify. He can make claims. He can be taveya. But the claim is just a claim. It has no evidentiary value. This is the thing I always point out to people. Unlike the way the Western legal system works, halacha operates as implicit and explicit in every halacha that we're learning. Halacha works very differently. In law, anyone testifies. Baldover testifies. His relative testifies. Interested people testify. Everyone testifies. And it's the job of the jury to decide how credible everyone is and to make a decision on the facts, what they think is most likely, whatever the standard of evidence is, based on what everyone's quote-unquote testimony is. In halacha, we have a very different system. A baldover, both in capital cases, as well as criminal cases, as well as civil cases, a baldover never testifies. Not the accused in a criminal case, not either of the litigants in a civil case. They plead, they make tainus, they make tvias. That has no real evidentiary value. And the only people who are meyid are people who are not baldover. And even people who are not baldover, if they're a karov, again, they can't be meyid. If they're a negabah dover, they can't be meyid. So the second understanding of a negabah dover is, a negabah dover makes you like a baldover, and a baldover is not meyid. There's a kasuv, like karov, maybe it's a svarab, but whatever it is, it's not, nothing to do with chashash sheker. And this is the pshat that Maram Lublin says on the Sugyan Baba Basra. He says, a negabah dover is like a baldover is like a karov. He says, adam karov, it's like krovim is exeris a kasuv. He makes a famous argument, often hurting yeshiva. He says, even Moshe can't testify for Aaron. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot testify on behalf of his own brother. We know for sure he's telling the truth. It's not a chashash sheker. Sometimes your relatives might be suspected of falsehood. Moshe and Aaron are not suspected of anything. Nevertheless, it's exeris akasuv. The Torah says relatives don't testify. And the negabah dover is like a baldover. He may not actually be the litigant in the case, but if he has an interest in the case, that's called a baldover, and he can testify. This is a major debate in the Achronim, which svara it is. Says the Maram Lublin, that's pshat of this Gemara. One of his pshatim is, that's pshat of this Gemara. Even though it's true, it makes no sense, just because he's no negabah dover, it makes no sense that he would lie and perjure himself and steal money, all to avoid the relatively minor problem of lava rush of lo yishalem. In Achanami, it's not a chashash sheker. It's exeris akasif. Once he stands to benefit to avoid being called lava rush of lo yishalem, that makes him like a baldover, and he's not neman, in spite of the fact that we don't have any realistic, plausible scenario in which he's likely to say a sheker. He just becomes automatically formally disqualified as an aid. The other point that Poskim discussed, major, major debate, which is largely based on this Gemara, is the question of what is the definition of negabah dover. Most cases in Shas and Poskim of negabah dover are, as we've been discussing, is financial interest. You stand to gain some money from the case. The Rambam has very, very powerful language. In his summary of this Gemara, Rambam brings the various permutations of the Gemara down, and then he generalizes, as he often does. He says, "V'chein kol kayotze be'elu adrachim," that anything where with some idea of negabah dover, we have to throw out the witnesses and dayanim. Dvar melu, he says, "Einam tluyim ela b'das hadayin." You can't ultimately, at the end of the day, you can't give rigid formal rules that cover all cases. It's up to the judgment of the dayan. Otzem binaso, the depth of his understanding. Sheyavin be'ikri ha-mishpatim, he has to understand the ideas of Choshen Mishpat. V'yeda davar hagarim l'davar acher, even indirect and far-fetched possible interest that people might have from the case. V'yamik liros, he has to see very deeply. And the key line is, in yimtza sheyesh l'zeha eid sad haniya ba'olam. If the dayan realizes the eid has some possible hana anywhere. V'eid azu, out of the testimony he's giving, afilu b'derech r'choka v'nefla, even if it's very remote and very wondrous, took a very sharp and very very astute dayan to realize this, raise a lo yad ba, it's an agab edus v'chein lo yadinos, so he can't be a dayan, and so on. So this Rambam, who gives this kind of passionate, eloquent language about any type of hana, even rechokav and nefla, many achronim suggest that the Rambam means to say that even hana which is not mamon, any type of hana whatsoever, anything a person stands to gain, personal good feeling, even that's considered hana. And the truth is, many Acharon try to be medayikid from the Gemara itself. The Gemara says, you don't want to have a stigma of lava rush of lo yishalem. It's not a question of money. Tosus actually asks, maybe there is money involved. Maybe you want to get rid of your balchov, because even if you have no other property, maybe you'll come into property in a week from now, and then you don't want him to come chasing you. Fine, that's a kasha of Tosus. But the Tosus says, no, that doesn't count as negabah dover, because that's not a present negir right now. Also a very important point of Tosfos, that a Negiah which is anticipated later but isn't here now is not considered a Negiah, Tosfos seems to be saying. But that's not what the Gemara says. What the Gemara says is love a rush of lo yishalim. You don't want either the personal moral feeling of discomfort, or you don't want the stigma of publicly being called love a rush of lo yishalim, whatever it is, covered, humiliation, your personal being able to live with yourself at night, whatever it is. The Gemara pretty clearly is saying that that even non-financial negiah, many acharim are medayik, is considered a negiah b'davar for an aid or a dayan. Now there is a clever suggestion. The Heshev Moshe actually wants to suggest that it really is considered negiah b'davar of mammon, because having a good reputation, having a good credit rating with the credit bureaus will help you do well in business tomorrow. So it does affect your long-term financial future. He really rejects it. He says that's too remote, that we don't really consider, he says. And many acharim medayik from the Gemara that even a negiah of Eina Shel Mamon, a negiah of Kavod, for example, of personal feelings, is a negiah b'davar. The most famous example of this, the most famous proponent of this shita, most interesting for sure, is, may have mentioned this earlier, is a tshuva of Reb Levi Ibn Chaviv, the Maral Bach. He was writing during the great debate over the reinstatement of Smicha in the 16th century. He had a major, major battle with the Mari Beirav, Rabbi Yaakov Beirav in Tzfas. Rabbi Yaakov Beirav wanted to reinstate Smicha. Not going to get into the details of their argument, long, complicated argument, but the Maral Bach said, no, I don't agree. Mari Beirav says, well, okay, we outnumber you. We in Tzfas, Tzfas was a larger and Jewish community than Yerushalayim was at that time. We outnumber you, we win. Maral Bach said, no, you didn't debate me, you didn't engage me, you didn't hear my argument, so a rov doesn't count. Also a major yisod in Dayanim and elsewhere in Chosher Mish, but a rov that doesn't engage the miut doesn't count. So Mari Beirav says, okay, so now we'll engage you, we'll listen to you now, and we'll hear you out, and then we'll decide again, and then if we still feel we're right, then we'll win tomorrow. Well, Bach said, nope, nothing doing, you're negiah b'davar at this point. Since you're already on record as saying what you said, well, you're already on record, and for you to have to back down and say, Maral Bach convinced me I was wrong, would be terribly humiliating for you, that's negiah b'davar. It's not negiah of mammon, he says, but so what? For a Talmud Chacham, for a Dayan, for a Rav, to have to admit that a position he took, a formal position he took in public was wrong, that someone else was able to convince him that he was wrong, is hard to do. And we can all understand that. So the Maral Bach held that was something which is negiah b'davar again, even though it's in negiah she'ena shel mamon, like the Gemara. They bring other rayas to this idea from several other Gemaras in Shas, that even a negiah of personal kavod or gnai, some posts can actually distinguish between a negiah to get kavod, which is not such a strong temptation, versus a negiah to avoid humiliation, which is a really strong temptation. But whatever it is, that's what the Maral Bach felt, that to avoid temptation is considered negiah b'davar, even though it's not mamon. And one of the rayas they bring again is from the Gemara, that to avoid love or rush of lo yishalem might make you a negiah b'davar. Many other acharim say the same thing. Marashtam, probably most acharim say, come out with similar positions, that even a negiah, which is not mamon, is a problem of negiah b'davar. Shach discusses this in Siman Lamed Zayin. The Shach discusses the question of whether a gizbar, someone who is an officer of a charity fund and has control over the disposition of the assets, he himself can't take them for himself. They have to be used for charitable purposes, but he controls them. Now, the question is he able to be made that his fund has certain assets? So they talk about whether Tavas Hanah is Mammon or is not Mammon, but the question is, even if it's not Mammon, what happened to Negiah B'davar Eina Shel Mammon? So that's one of the discussions over there, whether the simple Tavas Hanah, the fact that I want to control more money and be able to do with it as I please, that itself is a negiah she'ena shel mamon, which according to many poskim is enough to be called a negiah b'davar. Now, the Heshev Moshe has a very, very long discussion of this whole sugya. He discusses many of the positions of the earlier achronim. One of the points he makes is that, as we've discussed previously, ohev and sone, as we've seen in our siman, ohev and sone is pasul for din. Someone who's a close friend, some poskim say any friend, or l'chol hapachos is a close friend or a bitter enemy, is possible for din, but it's not possible for edus. So says the Heshev Moshe, a person who has a close friend, we know the philosophers tell us, we learn it from Sukkim, but part of what friendship means is wanting your friend to do well, wanting your friend to be happy. Someone who has a true friend certainly wants his friend to be successful, to have money, to have happiness, to have whatever he needs. So why isn't every ohev considered a negiah b'davar? You have a personal... If you're going to tell me that even a negiah she'ena shel mamon, just a personal reason for wanting a certain outcome, why isn't that enough of a reason to be... So if you're going to tell me that even that kind of negiah is negiah, why isn't every Oivin Sarni possible as Megabadar? Now, for Dayan, he is possible, but for an aid, as we mentioned earlier, for an aid, Aidim are allowed to be Oivin Sarni, Mikra Din. So what's the difference between Negiya Sheina Shel Mamon, which was saying might be a problem, and Oivin Sarni, which is not a problem? So he struggles to explain differences. He suggests that somehow, I don't fully understand the Svara, but he suggests that if your Negiya comes from someone else, from someone else's benefit, that's like a selfless Negiya. So I don't know why exactly, but that's not called Negabadavar. Negabadavar is only what you want for yourself, not what you want for somebody else. But it's a difficult problem, trying to understand, and that's Taka the Raya many poskim bring. Many of the poskim who argue, with Marit notably, Marit argues at great length that Negabadavar Sheina Shel Mamon is not considered a Negiya. So, and his Raya is from Oivin Sone. You see that Oivin Sone, even a close friend, is kosher for Eidim. So you see, personal feelings don't create a psul for Eidim. Now, for Dayanim, they do. So it might come out, according to this idea, that a Negiya Sheina Shel Mamon won't be kosher for Din, but will be kosher for Eidim. That's a possible distinction. Just close by mentioning the Marshal. Marshal has a major chiddush. He himself acknowledges that it's a major chiddush. Marshal makes this argument in reverse, kind of. The Marshal says, we keep saying, it's an explicit Gemara, an explicit Shulchan Aruch. All the posts can agree that a Sone, even a Sone Gomer, even someone who you haven't spoken to for 3 days, or an Ohev Gomer, someone who's your best man at your wedding during the Sherev Brachas, during the day of the wedding, is still kosher for Eidos. He's possible for Dayan because Dayan is subtle and it depends on bias. It can be influenced by bias. But he's kosher for an aid. A Sone can be an aid. Says the Marshal, there are actually three levels. The Sone She'eino Gomer is kosher even for Din. Sone gomer is possible for din and kosher le'edus. A sone really, really gomer, for example, someone who has been the victim of an attempted murder, so things like that, someone whose whole life is consumed by bitterness and anger, someone who's an absolute sone, such a person is possible even for edus. And the reason is, he says, because it's like negabadavar, ein lecha negaya gadol mizeh. So Marshal makes this exact argument in reverse. Other poskim are arguing that Negiya She'eino Shel Mamon has to be okay because it can't be worse than a Sone. Marshal turns the argument on its head and says, no, on the contrary. A Sone who's such a bitter Sone, who's been a victim of a murder, by an attempted murder by somebody else, is possible because that itself is Negabadavar. He seems to be assuming also, and Marshal actually rules in our context too, that Negiya She'eino Shel Mamon is Taka a problem, even for Eidim, even though it's not Mamon, if you're Negabadavar in Kavod or in personal feeling, that is considered Negabadavar.